Welcome to the Cure for Chronic Pain podcast with me, Nicole Sachs. You are here. Hello, my loves. What is up? This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain, with me, Nicole Sachs. Psyched to be here with you. Oh my God. So I want to give you a snapshot of my heart right now. So today is the first of a kind of episode, which is a where are they now kind of vibe. I have been listening to what you guys are wanting. And one of the things you guys ask a lot about is, where are these people who were your real-time heels? Where are they now? What is their progress? Did it matter that they came on and bared their souls for millions of people? You know, did it move the needle? You know, I get this question a lot. And so as I said, as I sort of introed what we're doing right now in the podcast is, you know, we're kind of all over the place and exactly where we need to be, which is every week is going to be sort of a different piece of content that I feel speaks to what you're asking for. And so today we're going to do an update on my second ever real-time heal with Brooke. And the reason that my heart is so full right now is because of Brooke's story and how devastating it was when I first heard about it. So let me tell you a little bit about what it was like when I first read Brooke's submission asking for a real-time heal. She wrote to me that she was 27 and at 27 had already had 5 surgeries for endometriosis and then what she thought was related hip pain, including thoracic surgery, including a full radical hysterectomy by the age of 27. And just the sweetest, loveliest, most willing, most open, most, the way I felt when I heard from her, it's just like my entire heart went out to her because of how much she had lived through. And I didn't even know very many details of her life. I just knew about the surgeries. And I knew that what had happened in terms of her trajectory was she was diagnosed. She had no pain, no physical symptoms at all till she was 21. She was diagnosed with endometriosis at 21 when she got horrible pain that led her to have to quit sports and basically like change her entire life. And then it just cascaded from the pain would move from one place to another. Her periods were incredibly painful and heavy. And so she ended up getting one surgery after another. As the pain moved around, she was kind of chasing the pain around with these surgeries. And where she found me with the real-time heal was she had finally gotten this radical hysterectomy. She was a few months out from it. And unfortunately, the pain after she had gotten the hysterectomy and gotten a lot of relief because she didn't have periods anymore moved to vaginal pain where she was unable to have sex. And, you know, it's just a typical for me, being a person who's been walking this path for over 20 years with people, a very typical TMS story, which is I'm not here to say whether any surgery is necessary or unnecessary, but the sad fact is since we live in a mind-body system and since pain has to be felt somewhere, meaning emotional or physical pain gets expressed somewhere if it's not felt properly, when we have surgeries and they do alter our physical body and perhaps provide some symptomatic relief based on physical structures in the body, if the work hasn't been done, oftentimes the pain will travel to a different area of the body and we chase it. And where I found Brooke in the real-time heal is that she was really, I won't say devastated because she was very inspired that the work she had done thus far, she had already found TMS work and had done my course by the time she did the real-time heal with me. She had great improvement. You know, she went from not being able to drive more than 20 minutes at a time to driving hours at a time. She went from not being able to really exercise or take care of herself to be able to like walk and and do her floral business. So she was functioning again. She was functioning again through the work, but she was so traumatized by the surgeries and by her subsequent infertility, and she was not able to look at that. And that's what so many people find themselves, or so many people find themselves with trauma, is that when we get better enough to just function and we're so grateful for being able to function, we don't want to look there. We don't want to look back. It's almost like, and she said in her interview, which by the way, you're going to hear, because I'm going to give you an update about where she is now. And then we're going to hear the whole thing, so you guys can have the entire story. And it's so rich and it's so full of good information. And if you're walking this path, you will be grateful to hear it. I just re-listened to it and I'm just like, my soul is like so, so present and so full of this, of gratitude for this work, for her and for me and for every one of you, because of how powerful it is. So you'll be able to hear it. But anyway, she just was like, I don't want to be the sick girl anymore. Like, I just can't. And I said, I know, baby, but if we don't allow ourselves to take those little girls by the hand, those little girls who are suffering inside, and bring them back to the trauma of the surgeries, to the trauma of this fact that, you know, she didn't know whether she'd ever have a baby. She did, you know, I mean, obviously she couldn't have a biological baby. She couldn't carry a baby after hysterectomy. She just was so not even able to go back and look at that because it's so painful. And then to have no idea whatever happened. You know, was she ever able to go back and look at it? Would she ever even like decide whether or not to be a mom, or to play with the idea of how worrisome or how scary or how conflictual that would be? Like, I had no idea. I had no idea. All I knew about Brooke at the end of our interview was that she had had these surgeries. She was really not yet able to have gone back and been with the trauma of them. And she was not yet able to go back and look at her infertility in a way that she might decide, you know, about parenthood. And it was, she was in a good place because she was open and willing, but she had a lot of work to do. And until yesterday, when I heard back from her, I did not know where she had been. So let me just say that before we go on, I'm just going to play Brooke's speak pipe for you so we can all together hear what she's been up to and what she's done and how she's evolved through the last couple years. It's been 2.5 years since I spoke to her. And then I will come back with you on the other side. So here's Brooke. 2.5 years later, Real Time Heal, number 2 ever. Where is she now?
Hey, Nicole, it's Brooke. Thank you so much for reaching out to hear how I'm doing now. It's been a couple of years, I think, since our Real Time Heal. I'm doing really wonderful. My husband and I have a baby girl on the way via surrogate. My friend offered to carry for us last summer. She is 24 weeks along already, and she's due in late December. We are beyond excited and so grateful to have been able to do this. My friend and science has given us an incredible gift, and it still feels very surreal. Since our Real Time Heal, I have gone through many ups and downs, but where I'm at right now, I would have never imagined getting to. I have learned that healing TMS has many stages. And just when you think you can't make any more progress, you do. And when you have been doing this work for a significant period of time and are feeling stuck, the big progress usually happens when you just let go. About a year ago, when we were going through the IVF process to create an embryo for my friend to carry, I had a setback and I panicked. I was journaling every single day like it was my job. I knew that I was going through something that is really hard, because everyone was telling me that's so hard to go through. Because it is. It's a textbook hard thing to go through, IVF. And I thought I had to stay ahead of it to keep myself safe. But I was actually putting myself in a much worse nervous system state than I needed to be. I was making it harder than it already was, holding on to this fear around journaling, thinking if I didn't do it, I wouldn't be okay physically. Journaling got me out of TMS, but I was carrying too much fear and anxiety around it. I don't know when it happened exactly, but I realized recently that for the last 6 or so months, I've just been living my life and journaling is not on my list of daily to-dos anymore. It's rarely on my mind, actually. It's something I do when I feel called to do it. And a lot of the time, when something big and hard is happening in my life emotionally, I'm able to meditate through it and feel those feelings rather than writing them out and feeling them. I've become better at processing sooner and holding space for my feelings in a loving way because journaling gave me the tools to do that. My nervous system is no longer afraid of really difficult emotions I'm noticing. TMS healing is definitely a lifelong journey, and that's okay. Sometimes I get symptoms, but rarely do they keep me down. I hike with my dog 6 miles 5 days a week and can't remember the last time I missed a day, even if I had a symptom. I'm at a place where I can be in the middle of the woods, no cell service, get pain, and laugh about it, knowing I can take a seat and self-soothe for 5 minutes and then get on my way. A year ago, that would have sent my nervous system into a panic and fear state. The brain can rewire is something I've learned. It just takes a lot of time for it to fine-tune. Setbacks, I hate calling them setbacks because they're just part of the journey. And each time you have one, you just make an even bigger stride. I'm sure I have more mountains to climb in my TMS journey over the course of my life, little downs and big ups. But right now I'm at a stage where I just finally let go and realized I can live my life. I can work. I can become a mother. I can have friends. I can go out and focus on other things just like anyone else deserves. I don't have to walk around like a fragile person who has TMS and needs to stay on top of it. I really hope this message helps someone let go of that idea. Thank you so much for letting me share and be a voice for this work. I'm so grateful to you.
Okay. Oh my God. I have to recover. I've listened to that like 4 times and I just cry every single time because what Brooke's been through and what she was able to learn and how she was able to integrate it and the fucking willingness and the up at dawn, left foot, right foot, breathe of living a human life. It's so poignant. It's so beautiful to me. And arriving at a place where she can hike in the woods and 6 miles every day with her dog and prepare to be a mother. You guys need to understand the energy of her first like few interactions with me. Even before we got on Real Time Heal, She would write me. She would email me. And it was like she was in such despair. I remember one time she wrote me a line, "I don't think I deserve to heal." And just to listen to her, it's just phenomenal, guys. And this is the way. And the fact that Brooke evolved her journal speak practice from a save your life kind of situation to a realizing that she was holding on to it too tight, which we've discussed on this podcast. It's not a life sentence. And you can't, you know, sit with your nervous system and be like, oh my God, if I don't do this, I'm not going to be okay. You know, it's an evolution of safety and to arrive at a place where she can self-soothe in the moment, but know she has that toolkit with that journal speak practice to pick up whenever she needs. At this point, Brooke and I are same. You know, that's me. That's the pinnacle, by the way, of this work. There's no cure for the human condition and there's no cure for human pain, but you can know that you have the tool. You can walk through your life with willingness and openness and surrender and self-compassion and bravery. And then when you need it, you use it. And when you don't, you just practice acceptance that it's flawed. This experience of being human is flawed and beautiful and stunning and hard and heartbreaking and euphoric and all the freaking things. Wow. Okay. Well, Brooke, thank you, my love. Thank you for falling to your knees in surrender and reaching out to me. Thank you for doing the hard work that you did for yourself. Thank you for inspiring others and carrying the message of this work. And thank every one of you guys for listening because I know how hard it is to open your mind to something new and different and to be the person that saves your own life. So, okay, So now, just to close up the pod and to give you the full experience, I'm going to replay Brooke's Real Time Heal here today so you can not only know the intro that I gave, which is where she began, you can know where she was 2.5 years ago when we met, and then you can remember where she is today, and you can use that inspiration on your own journey to know that you can keep going. I send you tons of love, and I hope today is a good day. Today, Brooke will be joining us. She is the most lovely human. Oh my God, I loved talking to her. And she suffered and suffers from endometriosis, endometrial pain, and other pelvic issues that seemed to move around, along with some pretty severe shoulder and arm issues that that happened during her process. And Brooke has come a really long way. She has an incredible story of pain and of healing, but she also still struggles. And so she wrote to me, and I happily agreed to have her on the podcast. She is fucking brave. She's an amazing badass. I have mad respect for her. She's 27 years old, and she comes with total openness and willingness, and her heart just ready to receive guidance. And I was thrilled to be able to give her some help today. And I hope that her story helps many of you guys out there, not only with the content we discussed, but by her example of being brave and willing to be out there and to allow others into her healing journey. I can't say enough about how I feel about this interview. So it's my privilege to bring it to you today. Just in case you need more information about learning about how to do this work for you, hop on over to my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Click on my resources tab for everything that I offer. My online course is right there for sale on my website, which I am hearing more and more every week, people telling me what a game changer it is. And Brooke, actually, part of her healing that brought her as far as she has gotten has been to do the course. And so without further ado, I am so excited to share this interview with you, this therapy session with you. Brooke, if you choose to listen, because she said she wasn't sure if she was going to, honey, you rock. And I am so proud to now know who you are, because I think you're amazing. All right, guys, until next time, this has been Nicole, Cure for Chronic Pain. Enjoy the interview. So we are starting the recording. I am going to welcome Brooke today. Welcome, Brooke.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So Brooke and I are here to embark on our second ever real-time heal. And neither of us have any idea what to expect, but I will say, just for the record, that the one I did with Angie last time got a better and more excited response than any podcast I have ever done. So people are really excited about the prospect of us just talking, just being together and figuring out the best path for someone to take on this journey. So Brooke, I appreciate you being here, and you can just, I mean, it's okay. So if you were in session with me, what I would do is I would sit down with you and I would say, Brooke, let me know the backstory of why you are here today, and then we will figure out together what you need. So why don't you just start there?
Okay. All right. I guess I'll start kind of from the beginning and go as quickly as I can just onto how I got to even doing your course.
Sure.
So I was always an athlete growing up, and I was very, very healthy, and I never had any pain. And I played volleyball in college. And then when I turned about 21 years old, I started having a lot of bladder pain. And then eventually I started having really painful periods that were just like completely debilitating. And my boyfriend, now husband, would take me to the ER, and nobody could figure out what was going on. so I ended up quitting volleyball because of the pain, but I did make it through and I graduated college. And I came home back to the state I was from. And sorry about that if you just heard that go off.
No, go on.
And I was seeing a bunch of doctors. We were trying to figure out what was going on. and someone just.
And what were your primary symptoms at that point that you were seeking treatment for?
It was just like stabbing bladder pain, like burning when I urinated, super sharp pulling pains on my period, and like intense cramping, to where like one little movement could just set off everything. I just felt like completely inflamed inside. It was like just so miserable. Like I felt like I couldn't even move or function. And then as I was trying to figure out what was wrong, during like about 3 years after college and not getting any answers, the pain became chronic and turned into every single day. So like, I mean, I used to run every day, and I like vividly remember the day that I was out for my run and it just stopped me in my tracks. And I wasn't on my period, and I was like, shit, like, what the heck? Is this really just stopping me right now? And I remember someone driving by and pulling over and going, are you okay? And I was like, yeah, I'm fine. And I made it home, and I never ran again for 6 years. Yeah. And yeah, it just was a downward spiral from there. I tried acupuncture. Oh my gosh, I tried so many things, like herbs, just threw so much money at trying to get better, diet changes. And then finally, a gynecologist, you know, and I just remember doctors just blowing me off, making me feel like I was crazy. And I finally remember a gynecologist seeing like a chocolate cyst in an ultrasound. And he was like, oh, wow, you probably have endometriosis. So I had a surgery within a week because those are really dangerous, the blood-filled ovarian cysts. And he removed them, and I had a really high stage. And he, you know, I could feel in his voice that he didn't feel very good about my outcomes for my quality of life, because there is no cure for that disease. But he did the best that he could. And I was really hoping that it would help. But within 3 months, I had more chocolate cysts and was already being scheduled for another surgery. And I had all the pain was back, but worse. So then I went on social media, you know, I'm looking up endometriosis like crazy. I'm like very just motivated. Like I just like spent my whole day trying to figure it out, and found this girl. I posted about what I was going through because I felt so alone, and I'd lost so many friends, and was so isolated. And some girl just saw my post because of a hashtag. And was like, Brooke, you need to get excision surgery with a specialist. So I ended up finding a great specialist in Atlanta, which was like a 7-hour drive from me. So I went there, had excision. It helped a little bit, but not as much as it should have. It's like the closest thing to a cure. They dig out the disease instead of just burning the surface, because if any cells are left behind, it just keeps like growing.
Right.
So wasn't feeling that much better. Then I found out and I started having hip pain. Got an MRI, and they're like, oh, you know, you have this condition called FAI that's really common with athletes. You've probably had it your whole life, but now it's just hurting. It looks like you have a labrum tear too, probably from being in stirrups for 6 hours during your surgery. So I'm like, all right, what do we do? They're like, we do surgery. So I get a hip surgery. I'm 25 at this point, or 24. I don't even know anymore. I can't even tell you. I won't be able to do it perfectly with the timeline. It was all such a blur. So I get a hip surgery like within 6 months. So that's like two surgeries like in a year. And then that heals fine. And then my endo pain starts, not even endo pain, just all these new pains, just still the sharp pulling pains. My periods still sucked. They weren't as bad, though. I started having belly button pain. So I go in, and Dr. Sinervo is his name. He does another surgery. He's like, God, it's like chipping away at the iceberg. It just won't go away. I've never seen a case this bad. So
that's always great when the doctor says, I've never seen a case this bad. It's always my favorite.
Yeah, it stuck with me. I felt like a failure, because I could feel his disappointment and frustration. So I ended up having, then I got married after that one. We're on our honeymoon, and I literally cannot lift my arms. I am in stabbing pain in my shoulders, right in the front of my shoulders. And me and Hayden, my husband, just have no idea what's going on. We've traveled all the way to Canada for our honeymoon. on the West Coast, and we're just, I mean, it's just, again, something else is just like totally fucked up because of my pain.
Right.
So he's like, he's researching because he just wants me to feel better. And he finds that you can get shoulder pain from having endometriosis on your diaphragm because that's the phrenic nerve. So we call Dr. Sinervo and he's like, you know, in your surgery, I did see some on your diaphragm, but I just didn't say much about it because you weren't symptomatic and you can only remove it with thoracic surgery. And he's like, that's really dangerous, Brooke, and the pain will only get worse. You need to come back. Went back.
Oh, boy.
6 months later, had another surgery, this time a laparoscopy through my pelvis again to clean up all that and through my chest. Sorry, I'm like getting emotional.
No,
I always do because I don't talk. I don't know, whatever.
No, but you know what? Listen,
like you're not going to cry and then you fucking do.
No, but you know what? This is the thing. This is the thing. We're here. We're doing this real time heal. This is therapy. And I applaud you for being able to be present and to feel through it. And I'm sure many people listening, first of all, you're helping them. And second of all, they're crying with you because we're all the same and we all hurt the same. So I really feel for you and I feel with you.
Okay. Thanks for saying that. So I went and had thoracic surgery, which was terrifying. And I remember when I found out on my honeymoon, I called my mom and I like really thought that I was just going to take my own life because I just felt like it would just never stop. So I had that though, and I didn't, obviously. Thank God. I had that surgery and that helped a lot with my symptoms there. But I always found it really, really strange that I had it on my diaphragm all along, but it didn't choose to become symptomatic till later.
Right.
Especially during my wedding, which was very stressful for me because we had a really small, like 20 people wedding because of my pain. But I just so much pressure and fear about having pain on my wedding day. And we did do like a little hike for our ceremony and I was stressed about that. I was on a steroid pack, like, because that's the type of person I am, is to do a hike for their wedding. And I was not about to change who I am.
Right.
Just because of some pain. You know, I just kept trying to live this life while, you know, being in pain. And so, you know, that helped quite a bit. And I just continued to struggle though with those periods and my uterus pain. And this past January was actually my final surgery. And I actually had a hysterectomy. So I had my uterus, my cervix, and my tubes removed. And I think that it helped a lot. I think that as much as it sucks, you know, I'm 27 now. I just turned 27 in July. But I think that I've had the hysterectomy option in my head for so long. I almost felt like I held so many negative feelings towards my period and my uterus. Yeah. And it was so, I don't even know, just such a fired up idea in my head. I just dreaded it so much. It had such a negative connotation that I just almost just wanted to take it out of my body and be done with it for a long time. Mm-hmm. Like I had thought about doing it a couple of surgeries back, you know, and I think that it helped me like get here for sure. You know, I know everyone has a different journey, but I do kind of feel like if I had never just done that, and I'm not telling anyone to get surgery by any means, what I'm saying for me and my own journey, if I had not done that and gone through that, I don't know if I ever would have gotten here to doing the work that I'm doing now. But yeah, it's been crazy. I found Nicole's podcast just on a whim.
So let me ask you a quick question just to kind of bridge the story here, because I don't know the answer any more than our listeners do. You're doing great. I mean, I'm just floored by your story. And so you had the hysterectomy, but obviously that didn't solve all your problems because that's why you were seeking in the first place that you even found my work. So help us understand, you had the hysterectomy, maybe for mind, body, and spirit, having that hysterectomy was necessary for you. Like you're saying, you're not telling anyone else to do it, but for you, because of years and years and years of a relationship with your reproductive system that was incredibly painful, both emotionally and physically. And so that was your choice. And so, but having done that, what happened next that led you to be seeking this work in the first place?
I always had like a lot of scar tissue problems is what we thought.
But, you know, I wasn't having a period, which was great. So I wasn't having that buildup of pain, which is a different kind of pain. But then I started having vagina pain, which I had never had. Like, I had never really had painful sex, which a lot of people with endometriosis do have. So I was kind of lucky. My pain was higher up, in my abdomen. But, you know, my bladder was still really bothering me. And sex was really, really painful. Me and my husband could barely have sex at all. And today, it still is a really big struggle, which is a symptom that I am having a really hard time overcoming, is that, which is something that why I wanted to be on this podcast and talk to you. But, you know, it was weird. It was honestly, it solved one problem, but I had a bunch of new ones. Let's just put it that way. Stabbing vagina pain, almost like a migraine in my vagina. I love saying the word vagina, I guess.
good for you.
It's not weird good for me. It's been such a long journey. Literally not weird for me at all. Then I was just so fed up, and I had a family member actually say to me, I said, gosh, I love Ruthie Lindsay. She's been doing this thing where she journals. And a family member to me said, Brooke, when do you just learn to just live with it and just stop trying to get rid of it? And it had so much fire behind it. And I was so offended, that they would even try to say, just stop trying. It just didn't, it was just really rude in my opinion. So then I was even more motivated.
Now I'm really going to try.
So I found your podcast and I started listening. I watched all the YouTube channels on how to journal speak. I started journaling in May. And at that time, I wouldn't even drive myself 15 minutes to go to the grocery store. I just was living in so much fear of because my pain was not constant. It would be I'm just doing something. I'm walking around and boom, stabbing, level 10. And I am just on the ground feeling someone is just putting a knife right through me. And so that was scary to live with that, because you never know when it's going to hit. So you just want to stay at home. And sometimes it would be constant, or I'd have flares that would last hours. And I would literally just think about, I just didn't even know what to do, because I wouldn't take narcotics. Sometimes I was just oh my God, I wish someone would just knock me out right now, because I don't know how to get through this for another second. So I found you, I started journaling, and I started seeing some results. I had so much shit to journal about. I could not even believe it. Just my list was so long from college and high school. And I made the connection that when I was having my pain, I was going through a really significant, difficult time in college when all of that started, which was okay. That was huge for me in believing the work. And then I started seeing some little results, especially just in the way that I dealt with the pain. And then we ended up moving across the country, and I continued doing your work. This was around April. And I was like, all right, let's go try to move. So I started hiking, and I just slowly started seeing these huge differences in just my fear and how much I was doing every day. And now it's been almost 6 months, and I'm walking every day. I'm hiking. I drive hours every day, because I live in a mountain town. So I drive hours down the mountain to go get my, I'm a florist, to go get my flowers from different farmers. I am so much more independent, and not living in as much fear, not using my husband Hayden as a crutch to do things just so that I can stay safe. But I still do struggle with pain for sure. I definitely get flares based on stress. There's a lot of patterns that I'm still working through with the way that I think about myself. And, I have a practice. I see a grief counselor who also does yoga therapy, and she's been great for me, and she strongly believes in this work. The Curable app has helped me. Oh my God. I finished the whole Curable app in a week, and it really helped me take that step up in my physical activity. So I highly recommend that to anybody. So I try to wake up, meditate, journal, and then do a yoga practice now. And the fact that I'm doing a yoga practice and even stretching my tummy and like not being afraid of like those movements is just incredible to me. And I don't think I give myself enough credit for how far I've come. Sometimes like you just don't even realize it. You get there and you're like, you just have to stop and be like, holy shit. Like if I saw myself doing this even 2 months ago, I would have like cried about it. And sometimes you just get so caught up and you don't even take a minute to notice how far you've come. And you just keep trying to, I don't know, just keep thinking about the future and getting better and better instead of like appreciating how far
I think we can all
come.
Relate to that. It helps. I think we can all relate to that. I think that I oftentimes have to do that for myself. I have to stop and be like, do you even know how different you are than 6 months ago or than a year ago and how you dealt with this, this, and this, whether it's parenting or something with my work or something with my personal life. Mm-hmm. So I think we can all relate to that for sure. So, okay. So I have, I don't want to cut you off. Is there anything else that you wanted to kind of say as a check-in, like to get us to where we're going to start discussing today? Anything else?
Not really. I mean, I think I'll stop there and you talk for a little bit.
We'll go back and forth. Yeah. Okay. Okay. So the first thing I want to say is the path that you have been on has been incredibly, incredibly traumatic. I mean, from a very young age, having to quit volleyball through all of these alterations of your body. And I think that what's confusing to a lot of people who have TMS is that they don't know, quote, what's real and what's not. And they get very mired in this sort of soup of what needed to happen in order for me to be okay. And what did I do that didn't need, you know, a lot of people say this around surgery. Did I need that surgery? Did I not need that surgery? You know, and so here's what I want to say. And well, first of all, before I even speak to that, is that something that you struggle with?
I don't think a lot about I don't think a lot about whether or not the surgeries were right or wrong. I don't have like regret, but yeah, it is a struggle. It is like sometimes it's just confusing just to believe in surgery for so long and advocate for that to like having like a complete like flip in like my beliefs and what I think my pain is driven by now is sometimes tough to like sometimes like, you know, you go back and forth a little bit or you I don't know. It's just confusing. It's almost like I try not to think about the surgeries a lot. Because they were so traumatic. But I will say like, sometimes I'll just be like showering and I'll just like remember and I'll just like, I don't even know. My heart just drops and I just try to not think about it.
So I,
it's weird.
So I have two reflections, Brooke, for this exchange. The first is that, and I'm going to start with the second one first, honey, you have been totally traumatized. And I think that it is totally fair that you don't want to think about it. But I'm also going to suggest, so spoiler alert for 10 minutes from now, that getting rid of your current symptom imperatives is going to require us to gently and kindly and fully sit in the room and turn on the light with all those surgeries in the room. Because the feeling into the deepest, deepest places that we have had to live through. The reason that I think it causes so much pain in the now is because we by essence of survival, need to leave those little girls behind, whether they were when we were actually children or little girls inside our hearts, like leave them behind their suffering alone because we cannot bear the moment of having to be with them today. And so do you understand that? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's the surgeries are not something like I've journaled about a lot. So
I think, yeah. And the reason I think I'm bringing them up. So let me start now with the first part of the two things that I was going to say. The first thing is this. I don't think any of us now in 2019 with the level of medical knowledge that is available to us could honestly say what is, quote, necessary and what isn't. Because I think it is so beguiling how some people get a surgery and get no relief and some people get a surgery and get relief, but then all of a sudden they have a problem on the other side of their body. And you know, I hear this time and time and time again. So I can't sidestep it. And one of the reasons I chose you, because I got hundreds of responses of people asking for a real-time heal. And the reason you're the first one is because I'm challenging myself to discuss something that is very conflictual. You know, people talk about surgery and they say like, oh, I'm, you know, I don't know whether I should have had it. Or in your case, you say you don't feel that conflict over it. But still, the truth of the matter is it definitely flies in the face of what you're doing now. And so I just kind of want to call out the very natural confusion, like you said, you're confused, mm-hmm. that we have over surgery. And here's, and so I'm going to come with a solution, which is, here's what I think about anyone who, whatever you've lived through, where you arrive at today and you have symptoms today that you want to be in complete freedom. Whatever happened in the past is what's happened. And your personality, Brooke, is so clearly one of the TMS personality, because no matter what you did to alter your physical body, your pain moved somewhere else, because your pain is begging for your attention. Your pain is begging to be seen and to be aired, because that's what we do. We are all the same. And everybody who struggles with this mind-body stuff, which is everybody, by the way, has that kind of situation where some people don't have a surgery, but some people, like, for example, have like migraines and they go on like the new injectable migraine medication and they see some effect of their migraines. I can't say how much of that effect is psychosomatic, how much of that effect is the nervous system being able to, the anxiety around the headaches calming down. And so the pain has, you know, a space to take a breath and see where else it's going to go in order to get your attention. You know, whatever the case may be, whether it be a surgery or a medication or a change in lifestyle or diet that leads from one thing to kind of calm down, if there's more work to be done, as Dr. Sarno used to say, you have more work to do, then it's going to move somewhere else. And so you've seen that in your life. And so the first thing I want to say is, whatever happened through all of that, you and I today, and then you and your journal speak, and then you with the lovely support you have of your grief counselor and your yoga practice, I'm going to be suggesting that you move there. And with a heart full of love for yourself and a heart full of acceptance for the confused sweet baby that you have always been, trying your very best to take care of your health, to sit with those times and to not try not to think about it, because that is, you know, what we resist persists.
Yeah.
And you know, and so how does that feel to you to think about doing that?
It feels like the right thing to do. I mean, I'm like a really open person, and I'm not like, it's weird. When I am resisting something, I'm not doing it consciously. I'm always, and I'm not trying to like put myself on a pedestal or anything. I'm a self pusher. I just don't, shy away from things. I've never been like afraid to go see a therapist or like really get vulnerable. So I'm okay with that. And I think I've come a long way just like in my practice and my self-awareness to feel comfortable with doing it. I think I just didn't know if that would be beneficial or hurt. It's almost like one of those things. It's like you kind of grow up with everyone saying, well, just forget and move on, like put it in the past. Yeah. So you're almost like with journal speak, you know, like, for example, my dad's been having neck pain out of the blue and chronic pain. And I tried to tell him to journal speak and he goes, well, isn't that a bad idea? Why would I want to talk about all those negative things? And I think it was kind of like that for me. Like if I'm thinking about it, it might trigger pain or like you just, I don't know. I just want to, a part of me too, just like doesn't want to be the sick girl anymore. I don't want people to look at me like that anymore. I just want to feel like me again. So I don't want to think about
it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And this is like, this is so golden. This is so, thank you for sharing that, because this is like exactly the message that I seek to share, which is that we live in a mind-body system. We need to shake the etch-a-sketch of everything we've ever been taught. And sadly, and that's why my work is so hard. And that's why this work is so hard, because we are trying to rewrite old beliefs that have been so, I mean, your father makes total sense. And my logical brain, because I can live with one foot in each, my logical brain and my evolved brain to understand this work says, yeah, dude, he's right. Don't look at that kind of stuff. But what I've learned in a painstaking fashion over years and years of my own body and thousands of people I've worked with is that darkness, if it is shoved down, needs to express itself somewhere. Our systems require it. And that is why we suffer as a society in so much systemic chronic pain and conditions, because it seems like not thinking about your surgery is the more adaptive response. It seems like it. It seems like not being the sick girl, you know, in your mind is the more adaptive response. But that is, it's so unfortunate how misinformed we have been, because when you stop and pause and turn toward the surgery and turn toward the trauma and turn toward all the things your father doesn't want to look at, what happens is we look at them. As my colleague on the Sarno panel used to say, we go into our darkest room, we turn on the light, and then what I added to it is, and we sit down and we spend as long as we need. Here we are, you and me surgery, you and me sphere, you and we sit together. And when we sit together long enough, what happens is the horror of it is initial shock starts to fade. And then the grief is so great, and we have to be willing to sit with the grief. And then the grief pours through us. And then there comes a space, a beautiful space that starts to open up around us of compassion and acceptance and love. And honey, that's where you and your husband get to have sex and throw down, and there's no pain. And there's no pain, because all this stuff, you know, I get why you needed to eliminate your reproductive system in your heart. I get it. And I don't know you, but I imagine that that's a decision that you're comfortable with in terms of, you know, you and your husband and having biological children. You clearly have thought about this, yeah. Right? Obviously, yeah. Yes. So those are all things that if you've thought about them and you've made the right moves in your life, and everybody, you know, does what they need to do, then sitting with all the little pieces of that, coming to that place of compassion and love and wholehearted understanding of why you did it, how it felt, what it was like to do it, and then it's so beautiful what happens. I mean, I can tell you from personal experience, your life and your trauma become like part of your heart. It's not something you have to resist anymore. It's nothing that is going to get you in the shower and make you feel like your heart sinks. And what's interesting about your symptoms, you say it's like a stab that comes from nowhere. And that makes a lot of sense for your very natural defensive posture, which is, by the way, all of us, all human beings have a natural defensive posture, but you're obviously a very able, very open person to life. And so your defensive posture is, no, dude, I'm going to do it. I'm getting through it. I'm going to do it. I'm hiking on my wedding day. I don't even care if I'm in pain. I'm the person who wants to do it. I'm going to do it. And I'm like that too. And a lot of people are like that are afflicted with, you know, mind-body symptoms, which is it's going to stab you. It's going to wait until it can take no more and it can be repressed no longer. And it's going to come in with a stab. And what we want to do is we want to disarm that trigger, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. And I just want to say that the surgery that the hysterectomy that I did have is not even a cure for the disease that I had. But I'm still feeling so much better. So it just says a lot about the work that I'm doing now. But I just want to put that out there because it's like a really big misconception with endometriosis. For me, it was kind of like just the period in general. And then a big reason why it was okay for me to do it was because with the amount of pain I was in, I couldn't imagine carrying a child anyway. But yeah, I mean, I definitely struggle with that choice too, as well, like a lot of fear surrounding that. And I think that I didn't really process what exactly I was doing until after the fact. But I definitely feel like I've been focusing a lot. And I guess I felt like I shouldn't focus much on the actual surgeries and how those affected me, because I've wanted to focus on what got me to the surgeries instead. You know, like I keep trying to journal on like what got me there. But I feel like I'm just exhausted. Sometimes I just feel like I've been doing this for like 6 months. And sometimes I just feel like I've exhausted so much of my past and journaling about it. And I sometimes I really like feel a block like in my brain. Like I try to journal and I just can't even come up with anything of substance for like a week. And then all this stuff comes out and I'm like, how did I not know that was there? Like, seriously, like I'm so open to it. Like, I don't understand how I didn't even know I was feeling that. And that's usually like where, like, it's funny, this like actually fell on a great day because I'm having like a horrible bladder flare. Mm-hmm. And it's frustrating. It's definitely frustrating and hard to keep going. Especially with having the business and everything, there's so much fear around it. Sometimes I just feel like I don't even know what to say anymore. And then it ends up coming out like a couple of weeks later. And I don't understand how my brain didn't let me even realize those things that were bothering me so much.
So here's a really good tip to bridge the gap between those kind of big awarenesses. So now I just want to know, in terms of my own understanding, Brooke, are you journal speaking every day?
Mm-hmm.
You are. So even when you can't come up with something, what do you do during those sessions?
I just write. I just like keep writing. I mean, I'm like, I love to write. I've always been like a writer. So I just keep saying like, I'm frustrated. I'm angry. This is fucking annoying me. I'm so fucking, God, I'm still fucking pissed at my sister-in-law for that or whatever. But I know those things. They're already on the surface. I've journaled about them a million times, but I'm like not getting anything new. And like, I've made so many leaps and bounds. Like my pain is so much better that like, I know this work is working, but I also still have such bad flares. I think I have a really hard time managing like my anxiety and stress around my business. And one thing that's been really interesting is I've like never been a perfectionist in my entire life. And ever since, like, I really almost like to a fault, like just really did not give a crap about much. Like even if my team lost the national championship, everyone was crying except for me, because I'm just like, yeah, there's a lot of other things in life. Really don't care. Which I know is not a great thing. But now that I think I said in my email to you, I had lost so much, like so many friends, which is a really, really tough one for me. So it was just such a critical time in my life, like my 20s. I feel like I lost so many friends and I didn't get to make new ones like everybody else did. And sometimes I feel like I'm starting over and I feel like I'm in a rush to make up for all the things I lost because I feel like a loser. I feel like I don't have friends or like, you know, just weird things. I think I have a lot of anger towards other people for not understanding that. And like to the friends who didn't like want to hear it or like continue being my friends, or just friends that just became so distant that like they're getting married and I'm not invited. And I know that if I had never gotten sick, I would be. You know, because we would have stayed in touch, type of stuff.
So this is all such beautiful, beautiful honesty. And also, so I want to say this to you. Okay. So you've been doing this for 6 months, which I know probably feels like forever, but, you know, it doesn't take, if it takes 20 years to walk into the forest, we don't walk out in 6 months. And so I just want you to have such comfort around that you are doing so beautifully. You're doing so amazing. You are so willing. You're so open. You're already seeing such a tremendous change in your standard of living. I mean, from a person who didn't drive more than 5 miles, you know, not wanting to go to the store, to be hiking and driving hours and having a full-fledged business. So first of all, definitely looking at the amount you've come, the space you've come in 6 months. But also to say to yourself, look at all that beautiful insight that you just shared. Sometimes it just takes a while for us to purge it enough for the reservoir to go down enough that we're not getting triggered. So let me repeat for anyone listening, and maybe Brooke, if you need a primer, on what Dr. Sarno used to say about the reservoir. Do you remember me talking about this, the reservoir of emotions within us?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna repeat it because it's so important.
Yeah.
So within each of us, and this is taking us directly from Dr. Sarno's theory that he taught me himself, picture like a science beaker, like a glass science beaker inside of each of us that exists somewhere between your belly button and the top of your chest that has every time something sad happens to you, every time you're triggered based on something that reminds you of sadness, fear, rage, shame, regret, embarrassment that happened in your childhood, you know, imagine a ladle getting dropped into, you know, liquid getting dropped into that beaker. Anytime we feel conflict, anytime we feel angry but we can't speak, anytime we feel trapped, anytime we are reminded of something that made us feel cringy, whatever, it gets a ladle amount gets dropped into that beaker. And when that beaker, which it does many times a day, reaches maximum density and threatens to pour over the top, we have a very slight reaction. Sometimes it's a serious reaction, depending on how repressed we are in our mind-body system, where it becomes more dangerous to feel the feelings because they're so big than it does to, let's say, get struck down by a migraine or to have a stab in the vagina or to have, you know, a flare up of our acne that's so embarrassing we can't leave the house, or irritable bowel, you know, diarrhea, go to the bathroom, back pain, neck pain, blah, blah, blah. You know the drill. And so it doesn't really matter how it comes out. The whole point is that the nervous system and the brain have done their job as long as they've diverted us from whatever consciousness that spillover because it would feel too big. And that's why I brought up your surgeries. I can't hide from them. And the reason I brought up your surgeries is because they're so big and they loom. And if you don't care to think about them, or if you didn't know how important it was to just process the depth of the fear and the trauma and the repression that was required to go through them, they're going to take up a lot of real estate in that beaker of those emotions. But we all have that. We all have whatever they are. What Journal Speak does, it systematically puts a ladle in and it spills it out. And that's why I love that you're doing it every day. That's why anyone out there listening, it is imperative, especially when you're in the early processes of healing, that you do it every day, followed by 10 minutes of loving kindness meditation, because this is what brings it down. Once it gets a couple inches below the top and not everything that happens to us makes it go over, the symptoms literally stop firing, which is why, Brooke, you've seen such a tremendous difference, you know, which is why you can go days and have this kind of freedom that you didn't have before. So all I want to say to you in terms of that aspect is you're doing beautifully and just keep swimming. And on the days where you feel like you're repeating yourself, here's what I do for myself. And I learn everything I learn, by the way, by doing experiments on myself. Because if I feel stuck, I'm just like, Nicole, what do you need? What do you need? You know, I ask my higher self, I ask my universal energetic guides, what do I need to tell people? And one of the things that I've come up with is, so you're sitting there, okay? So just picture yourself in a Journal Speak session. You're sitting there and you're like, oh God, this is like a whole lot of nothing. Take a breath, take a pause, take a big breath and say, what am I feeling most right now? It doesn't have to be connected to your sister-in-law or your work or your husband or your surgeries. It could just be a feeling. And a lot of times the feeling I get, which is hilarious because it's not really even kind of a feeling, is I'm tired. And I might just write, mm-hmm. I feel tired right now. And then my next sentence is, Nicole, why are you so tired right now? And then the next sentence has to be, I am so tired right now because, and it's actually kind of important to write all that out because it starts your brain in sort of preparatory phase of being able to answer the question honestly. And I might start with the surface stuff. You start like a court reporter. I'm tired right now because I didn't sleep well last night. And the kids are this and that. And I have 5 appointments today. And then I have to do a podcast interview tonight. And then tomorrow morning I have to travel. And I'm anticipating. And so that's like the surface stuff. But really, almost always, as I write, I start to dip into, my soul is tired. This is too hard. I don't want to do it anymore. Fuck this. I'm not doing the podcast anymore. It's too hard. Like, and don't worry, anybody. I'm not stopping. But what I'm saying is it's Journal Speak. It's like, it's hard. It's hard being a human being. Mm-hmm. It's exhausting. And if the feeling that came up that day was I'm sad, maybe I need to let myself cry about something I haven't cried about. Or maybe if the situation comes up and I say, why am I feeling so anxious today? I'm just feeling on edge. What's wrong with me? What is it? And if you ask enough, you will find yourself, you open like a flower and you get your responses, and you start, and then you're like, okay, I just clicked on something in my brain that needs to be clicked on. I need to do deeper Google search here in brain to figure out what's going on, and just operating with patience. And I want you to know also, with my deepest certainty, Brooke, that your symptoms are going to all be gone. I have no doubt. I see the trajectory you're on. I see your willingness and your openness. You're going to have absolutely pain-free, wonderful sex. You're going to do whatever it is that you want to do in life. I have no doubt. So it's just about understanding that thousands and millions of people have done this before you. Because if you count Sarno's work, he's been doing it since the 50s. I mean, people we will never know have healed from myriad conditions that we will never know. And you are just one of them. You're just a spoke in the wheel, which is great news. And it's just about continuing to patiently, kindly, and persistently go back where you need to go back. And when and a great, great barometer of what you need to go back to is when you feel something you don't want to look at. Like if you were in the shower and you thought of the surgery and your heart sunk, girl, that is your mind saying, we know where to go. That's where we got to go.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny that you say that when you journal and you don't know what to say anymore, you just say, I'm tired, because I do the same thing. I'm just like, I'm so tired. I have so much inside that I hold in, that I carry, like so much, like not forgiving, like hate, just so many things that like I try so hard to let go of, that it's a work in progress for sure. And you can almost feel them like getting farther away in a sense, like hate towards someone or lack of forgiveness. It's like when you think about them now, they just feel farther away. I don't even know how to explain it, but I know I still have a lot to work on. And there's a lot of things that are definitely difficult too, like just my hysterectomy and my infertility creeps up all the time. Like we just bought our first home. And it's weird because it's got like 3 bedrooms and I just keep thinking like, what if we can't adopt? Or it's just almost sad. It just looms over me sometimes. So, and I think I struggle because I don't feel like I'm allowed to be upset about my infertility because it was a choice. And I feel like people, I just always wonder, like if someone knew that I was upset, well, they just roll their eyes and be like, well, it was your choice. It's not like you had to get that done. You know, and I just think I feel like shame about it sometimes. Cause no one, sometimes I wish people could understand or have felt what I felt to know, okay, you would have done that too if you were in that kind of pain and not living your life.
Well, let me just be a person in your life to say, oh, honey, you have every right to feel every single thing you feel about it. All the grief, all the images of what it could be like and what it might be like and what it might not be like, all of it is so, it's so yours to feel. And first of all, fuck everyone. Okay, let's just start there. Fuck anybody who would judge you. But even forget this, because it's really never really about other people. It's always about us and about our own view of ourselves. So when we use other people and we say, well, what would they think? Oftentimes the real fear is, what do I think of me? What do I think of my, am I allowed? Or do I think I'm allowed to grieve? And I just want to say, you have a right to every inch, every millimeter of those feelings, and you need, and your body is screaming out. Why do you think it's sex that's unpleasant? Your body is screaming out and saying, please, Brooke, let us feel it all with reckless abandon, with complete freedom, because that is what's going to set you free to be a wonderful mother to whomever walks into your life. But you need to clear the path first, and you deserve everything. I think that as a society, and I don't really know exactly why we've grown like this, but we are more programmed to be prouder if we get by with less. You know what I mean? Like we're more programmed to be like, I can take it. You know, I don't need the whole plate. Just give me the crumbs under the table. Look, I'm so badass that I can get by with the crumbs under the table. And like that is so counterintuitive to whole body health. You deserve everything. You deserve every full, beautiful feeling, and you deserve your grief. You know, I think that sometimes we just want to shut the door on it because it feels like a defensive posture, and I get that, but you deserve to feel all of it, absolutely everything. And, you know, if I could just put my arms around you and just tell you that I love you and that you 100% deserve every feeling you have. And if you have any perception that you don't, I hope that you can take that from me.
Thanks. I really appreciate that. You're like making me bawl over here. Thank you. Yeah. I know that a lot of like the fears I have about what other people think, I just have because I believe them, mm-hmm. you know, like I believe it about myself. So then I'm scared that someone else is going to see what I think or feel what I feel, you know what I'm saying? And that's been like a really big realization for me, is that a lot of the times when I think someone doesn't like me or is judging me for something, they've literally done nothing, a fact that should make me feel that way. It's because I think that way about myself. So I think like learning to love myself and think more highly of myself and have better self-esteem has been like a huge thing for me. Like one of the biggest pieces of, just something I would tell anybody would be to just like every day, just put your hand on your heart and say, I love you as many times as you have to until you believe it. Because if you've never done that before, the first time you do it, you'll probably cry because it's so foreign and like you just won't even believe yourself. But it's a pretty awesome thing when you start to actually believe it and mean it when you do it. But yeah, I'm really hard on myself. I'm very, very hard on myself.
So. I want to add something to that practice because that's a beautiful suggestion. And I want to add something to that practice, and especially for you, Brooke, and I'm doing it right now. Put your hand on your heart and I want you to say, you are forgiven.
Right now?
Right now.
You are forgiven.
Because think about it. That's what we all really want. We want love, but love seems sort of easy-ish to get. Forgiveness? Forget it.
Yeah.
It feels like it's so hard to be forgiven. We're so hard on ourselves. And sweetheart, you are forgiven. You are forgiven for being in pain. You are forgiven for having surgeries. You're forgiven for the million things that you think you should be ashamed of from when you were a kid. And trust me, it's easier said than done because I can forgive you all over the place. It's really hard for me to forgive myself.
Yeah.
So I am right there with you. But I want to tell you that that is an important practice to add to your self-care, because I want you to start there. So, we're kind of winding this up. And what I want to say to you in terms of, as your therapist, Brooke, what I'm sending you off your prescription is that I want to tell you, please, from my heart to yours, I want you to begin every day with, I am forgiven. I am forgiven. I am forgiven in the eyes of humanity, in the eyes of all people suffering. I can't tell you what you have done for people today, Brooke. I'm going to get a billion emails from this episode because people are going to be so grateful for, and I will share some with you, anonymously, of course. People will be so grateful for your bravery and for your openness. And I want you to know that like you are loved and you are exactly as you are, perfect, and you are forgiven. And I know that's so cheesy, and I just need you to know it's so true. Like the cheesier it is, the truer it is, because why would it become a cliche if it wasn't freaking true? And I just want you to, I want you to start there, because whatever shame you're carrying around about however you got here, it's holding you back and it's such bullshit. It's so unnecessary. Let it go. Start with your forgiven, and in that space, in that safety of you're forgiven, what I want you to do is I want you to take that little flashlight and I want you to go into those dark rooms. And if you're not ready to flip on the full light, start with the flashlight, look around those surgeries, look around the infertility, look around your own doubt and fear that you're allowed to feel sad about it, and just hold the hand of that sweet baby, that little girl inside of you that really, really needs you to go back there and take her with you. Okay?
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much. I will definitely be doing that.
All right, honey. Well, it has been such a pleasure to spend time with you today. I so appreciate you coming onto the podcast, and I know that you're going to help a lot of people. So thank you, Brooke.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been awesome. I really appreciate it. I'm so grateful. Thank you.
All right. And for all of you guys out there, until next time, this has been The Cure for Chronic Pain, our second ever real-time heal with Brooke, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.